Looking for a new 1500 Silverado? Shop Beatty Chevrolet and get 2.9% APR for 72 months on a new 1500 Silverado. Or if you want a new vehicle and a Chevy Equinox LT fits your lifestyle, check out Beatty Chevrolet's lease option on a 24 Equinox for only $325 a month. And as always, buy with confidence with the Beatty Warranty for Life. Beatty Chevrolet on Parkside Drive. Online at BeattyChevrolet.com. Beatty Chevrolet, locally owned and operated for over 90 years.
Welcome into hour number two of Sports 180. Beautiful Thursday afternoon. Hope you are rocking and rolling this week like we are. I'm Heather Harrington along with Joel Silverberg. Logan Ward pushing all the right buttons. We just had the face-off a few minutes ago. Kicking off hour number two. When you look at everything, Joel, we kind of touched on it there in the face-off. The early signing period, I think it was one of those things that was, it was a rule, one, that I was in favor of at the time, where you wanted guys that had been long-term commitments, you wanted their phones to stop ringing. Like, they knew exactly where they were going. They didn't need to go through another 2 months of the recruiting process and people just hounding them and hounding them. So you're like, yeah, go ahead, sign during the early signing period. But now as you reevaluate, now we have more data. We're several years into the early signing period, which is just completely dominated. I mean, it's basically taken over National Signing Day as the primary most people sign on the early signing period instead of that first Wednesday in February. When you look at it, Joel, what are the pros and do the cons, do they start outweighing the pros?
Well, one thing that would happen before the days of the early signing period is usual time about December, early January, as seasons are wrapping up, bowl games are being played, you've got coaching changes. And so you have maybe some 2 or 3 star kids being committed to certain programs that have a relationship with a coach over the course of a few years. And then a new coach comes in and takes away that kid's scholarship. And with the early signing period, that was one of the pros, was a kid could kind of get his name inked to ensure that he had a place to go. Because for some prospects, when that would happen, there was a detailed story about a kid that was committed to UConn at the time that Randy Edsall left for the first time. And then the new coach came in and said, hey, we're drawing this kid's scholarship back. Like, we don't have a place for him anymore.
Yeah.
It's a week until, signing day in February. This kid doesn't have a place to go. He doesn't have a place to play football.
Yeah.
And so, obviously, that's not the target and the recruit that everybody is focusing on as signing day approaches. But it was to make sure that the students had a little bit more say in where they would ultimately go. Now the problem is that when you've got a high-profile recruit that wants to go to a certain school, wants to go to Notre Dame to play for Brian Kelly, and Brian Kelly goes to LSU, now the student-athlete doesn't necessarily want to go there anymore. So it can kind of change. Now, the continuity of Notre Dame situation specifically could kind of help that, but that's just an example of head coach leaves from one program to another, high-profile recruit, high-profile school. Maybe they don't want to go there anymore because of the head coaching change.
I think that's the biggest thing that is worrying me, or at least concerning to me, as we move forward. I think the problems of now we are in a situation where before seasons are truly over, you have schools wanting to make major drastic changes to get somebody new in by the early signing period to quote unquote salvage a recruiting class or whatever the case may be. And that speeds up the natural timeline of, okay, season's over. Now it's time to start the coaching carousel. So now the carousel starts earlier and earlier. And what happens when this keeps going? Like, what's the trend in 5 years? You've already gotten to the point now where Notre Dame still has a shot. Things, they don't control their own destiny, but they still have a shot at making the college football playoff, and they don't have a head coach because LSU demanded that, hey, if you're going to take this job, you got to take it today. Like, we are not waiting a couple of weeks until you know. We're not even waiting until Sunday after we know what happens with championship weekend to figure out if your team could be in the playoff or not. And so I feel like that is a pretty big consequence to something that started out as a really good thing for student athletes, but has turned into something that maybe isn't so good. It's kind of like making Frankenstein's monster, right?
Yeah. And I think the transfer portal and the quick trigger for a lot of student athletes to go from one school to the next for whatever reason, I think has gotten a lot more sensitive than it was when the early signing period was first designed. Everything is so everything is so prompt. Everything is so quick. You know, a player's not getting playing time. They want to go somewhere else. A player's low on the depth chart. They want to go somewhere else. They're not playing the position they want. They want to go somewhere else. Their position coach leaves. They want to go somewhere else. And so now you've got all these changes, and student athletes are constantly changing their mind about where they want to go play, what school they're going to go to. And so I think schools feel that pressure to then have to get that coach in quickly when you know it's not going to work beyond this season, because now you have a shorter amount of time to really salvage that recruiting class. Because at first, I think we all thought, yeah, like there's going to be a select few athletes that decide to sign in December.
Yeah,
and now it's the vast majority where, okay, maybe we've got like a couple of guys signing in February. Everybody's signing in December now.
Yeah, which is wild because I didn't think it would supplant. I thought most guys, they like the recruiting process. They wanted it to go longer or whatever. But I think these coaches have also applied a certain amount of pressure. Like, you got to make a decision, especially with the trend of early enrollees also happening. Like, go ahead and sign and we'll get your schedule laid out for you so that you're here in January when classes start back up.
And because guys want to get on the field immediately too.
Yeah.
And so they feel as if, well, I give myself a better chance of doing that if I'm there in the spring. You know, you don't really hear about the Eric Ainge type situation where they show up in the summer and they become the starter on opening day. It doesn't really happen all that frequently, especially at high profile positions. Mm-hmm. Now you have to get here in January. You've got to go through spring practice. You've got to compete for your position throughout the summer. And then if you don't get on the field in that first year, you're going somewhere else. Everything just changes so fast for every student athlete based on their situation.
Yeah, Eric Caton, he chimed in. He texted me. He said, I think coaches want the early signing period because they don't want kids potentially flipping over the next two months.
And that's part of it. The coaches want to get in there quickly. Schools want to get coaches in there quickly so that way they can save recruiting classes and get kids to sign in December. And once you're signed, you're there.
So is it good for college football then? Is what is happening now, which maybe it's unprecedented. Maybe this is a blip and it doesn't happen again, but I just have a hard time believing that. I just think the hiring and firing process is going to continue to move up and up and up, and that's going to have a big impact on college football.
It's chaotic, but I would also say with just about everything that's come with college football recruiting, there's usually something that happens that warrants everybody saying, well, we need to make a change. And that was the case with recruiting before. That's why the, you know, early signing period was implemented. Now a coaching carousel like this happens. Everybody's saying, well, okay, what does this mean for the early signing period? So if you go back, which I don't think will happen, but if you go back and eradicate the early signing period, okay, at what point do we start seeing the issues of old creep up again? So I don't think it's necessarily whether the early signing period is good or bad for college football. I think it's college football recruiting has gotten out of hand. They don't really know if there's any way to contain it.
It just is a byproduct of the whole system, which is all out of hand.
It's chaos.
It is.
College football recruiting is chaos, however you operate it.
656-9900, *990 is a free call for AT&T and U.S. cellular customers. We'll continue to weigh the pros and cons of the early signing period. Is it good? Is it something that should be reevaluated? We'll take your phone calls as well. John Wilkerson is set to join us in about 15 minutes, so stay tuned for that as well. That's all coming up on Sports 180 on the Sports Animal. Fun time in sports as we roll on. Holidays approaching. And just a lot of fun going on, especially in the college basketball world. We talked a little bit about during our look around the sports world, some of the unranked teams that were able to beat ranked opponents last night. And I think one of the biggest, Joel, when you look at what happened, Memphis falling to Georgia. Georgia, who was I think 2-5 team going into that game, now 3-5 on the season. The Georgia Bulldogs coming up with a win. That was just really impressive. And I think it falls into the category of weird things can happen. It's college basketball, but that is definitely a loss that Memphis is going to regret, I feel like.
Yeah, I would agree. And you're trying to bounce back from that Iowa State loss, which is a ranked team right now. But at the same time, this is a Memphis team that kind of felt like it fell on some hard times last year and trying to bounce back. And Penny Hardaway's had all this buzz. He's had the recruits. You get a big transfer in Landers Nolley from Virginia Tech. And now you've got back-to-back losses. Again, you don't want to overreact to anything this early in the season, but it kind of makes you wonder, is Memphis really just going to go back to struggling to compete for its own league again? And that's kind of been the case. Granted, Kelvin Sampson's done a fantastic job at Houston, but you know, all the buzz that Penny Hardaway's had since going to Memphis, like, shouldn't they have, like, won the league and be consistently going to the tournament by now? Like, that just hasn't consistently been the case for the Tigers since Penny Hardaway's gotten there.
I know, which is weird, especially with talent. Like, I mean, you know, one of the things you're sitting there thinking is, okay, so did Amani Bates not play last night? No, he played. Played 26 minutes. Jalen Duren played 26 minutes. Yeah. I mean, these guys, and they didn't shoot, like, terrible. They didn't shoot great. They were 7-20 from three. And I know they only lost by three, but when you look at it, you're just sitting there like, what happened? That is a game that is definitely going to haunt the Tigers.
They have not finished better than third in their own conference. They haven't been to the NCAA tournament yet.
Haven't been to the tournament, yeah.
They would not have gone the year that the tournament was canceled in 2020. And we're talking about the American Athletic Conference, which is a good basketball league. Like we shouldn't look at it the same way that we look at the football conference, but Penny Hardaway's had the talent to be an NCAA tournament team. And you're telling me that Penny Hardaway can't assemble a top 64 team in college basketball? It's been ridiculous. And especially with all the buzz that they had coming into this season with some of the recruits and the transfer portal coming off an NIT championship win from last season. And it just hasn't been there yet. Now let's see what happens if he gets this season turned around. But the fact that he hasn't been to the NCAA tournament yet, entering year four, is wild.
Yeah. And I mean, he's just got to get there. This year, he's definitely got to get there. You would imagine, especially with how much talent is on this team. And if they all stay healthy, you would be surprised if he didn't. But that was a head scratcher of a loss last night. I was just like, man, that Georgia one, that's not going to age well as the season goes on. I don't think Georgia is sitting there like crouching tiger, hidden dragon, ready to pounce on anybody, especially in the SEC. I did see this note from Mike Wilson. We talked yesterday on Bench or Battle Ready about Josiah Jordan-James. You know, what is his availability going to look like over the next couple of games versus Colorado on Saturday versus Texas Tech on Tuesday? Rick Barnes, when he met with the media today, just still called James day to day. He said he did not really have an update. He says we have so much trust in him and know he will let us know when he thinks he can be effective out there doing whatever it is he thinks he can help us with. So no big update on Josiah Jordan-James and what his availability is going to look like over the next few days.
And I think the way that Tennessee structures its team, you feel like you don't absolutely need Josiah Jordan-James. Not to say that he's not important. He is. He's a valuable member of what Tennessee does. But you also don't suddenly start freaking out about the Colorado game just because James may not be on the floor. And that's kind of the give and take that you have with some of these Rick Barnes teams, is he finds ways to get guys to just play and be ready to go in situations like that. And especially with the backcourt depth that we talked about yesterday.
I do wonder, when Tennessee finds themselves in a dogfight, when they need a go-to defensive play, or they need somebody to kind of calm the floor down and be that floor general, that leader, I do think that's the role that Josiah Jordan-James fills. I think he's a calming force. I think he helps everybody to think big picture, and then he can make either a defensive play or a rebounding play or a great assist play to spark scoring. You know, so he makes plays that help spark the offensive end of the floor.
Yeah. I think to have a role player like that, who's unselfish, who can still hit shots from outside when you need him to, who has the athleticism to drive if he can. I'd still like to see him become the aggressor on offense a little bit more, because I think he has the ability to take charge of a game. You just haven't really seen him do that consistently throughout the course of his career. That could change if they really got through to him and made him feel like he absolutely needed to, kind of like with John Fulkerson, where, hey, you know, you don't have to just be a role player. You can take games over. And it took John a couple of years before he finally got that message across in his head and then became that player, and then took a step back last year with the injury. But I think there's always that mental understanding of, hey, I've got the capability to do this. And maybe Josiah Jordan-James just needs to have that one game where, hey, it's time for you to take over in a big situation. And so I like the way that you put it. If it's a dogfight game and James has to be the guy, can he do it? And if it happens once, does that open up the door for a ton of other possibilities within his game?
Yeah, I want him to be healthy. I want us to get a good look at what Josiah Jordan-James brings to the table, especially with this pre-conference schedule that is going to present multiple challenges throughout the next month of the season. But, you know, to your point that you made earlier, this team is so deep at this point in time. There are options, you know, like a Justin Powell who came in and what started in place of James during the North Carolina game. Like, his role is going to expand, and it's interesting to see, you know, what direction he's going to go. Victor Bailey Jr. has started, you know, with Josiah being out. So I think there are a lot of interesting things that can happen, and you can work the puzzle to compensate for James being out. But at the end of the day, you want him to be on the floor. Like, he just makes the team better. He might not be the superstar of the team, but he makes the team better. And I think that's indisputable.
Well, he's not your premier scorer, but it's all the other little things that he does. He's usually your leading rebounding guard, which definitely helps when you've got a guards that are willing to rebound, because you're not playing that Virginia style of basketball where you want guards getting back after shots go up and trying to prevent the transition game. Tennessee's aggressive enough on defense where it's willing to take those risks. And so it helps that you have a guard with size like Josiah, who's able to make plays on other areas of the floor, helping with ball distribution, able to make plays on defense, picking up steals. He's got a little bit of help with rim protection. You know, he can block shots when you need him to, because he can help on the weak side. So I think for Tennessee, Josiah Jordan-James, you're right. It's not necessarily about making that big shot late into a game, though I do think he could potentially have the ability to do that. It's literally everything else on the floor that picks up for everybody else. When you've got underclassmen that aren't used to playing that grit style of defense, when you've got guys that are usually a little bit more active in the offensive end, having somebody like Josiah Jordan-James picks up for so many of those little tiny holes that need to be filled quickly when you start finding yourself in a tight game.
I know Colorado lost last night pretty handily to UCLA. UCLA's an elite team.
Right.
I mean, they're going to be great this season.
Tiger Campbell had a huge night for the Bruins.
What do you think of Tennessee going on the road versus Colorado? And I'll just remind everybody that's going to be 2:00 on Saturday.
I think it's a good test for Tennessee. I think they should be confident knowing what they did against North Carolina. The Villanova game didn't go well, but I think if you're Tennessee, you feel like we haven't played really too many true road games yet. Now we're going on the road against a team that a good number of us have seen before. I think it's a really good test for both teams, actually. And I think that's kind of maybe a potential barometer of where these teams are at this point of the season. I think both teams are going to try to play high quality defense and maybe keep it low scoring. And I wonder, with Tennessee's outside shooting, does that ultimately be the difference in a game that Tennessee won a year ago?
656-9900, *990 is a free call for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. We'll take your phone calls over the next half hour. Also, John Wilkerson set to join the program. I definitely want to pick his brain about Major League Baseball's lockout situation. Where should our concern level be with that impacting the season? Get his thoughts on this Tennessee basketball team that's going to play Colorado on the road and then head up to New York City to play in Madison Square Gardens against Texas Tech and the Jimmy V Classic. That's all coming up in like the next 6 days. It is wild times. And then, of course, who is going to win the SEC championship game this Saturday? John Wilkerson joins the program coming up next on Sports 180.
Tonight in the NFL, kickoff at 8:20. The Saints will host the Dallas Cowboys. Taysom Hill will get the start at quarterback for the New Orleans Saints. Also, VFL running back Alvin Kamara will be out once again with an injury. In college basketball tonight in the SEC, only two matchups. Liberty hosts Missouri at 7 o'clock, and at 8 o'clock, Mississippi State will take on Lamar. Tonight in the NBA, the Knicks host the Bulls at 7:30. The Raptors will face the Bucks at 7:30 as well. The Suns will take on the Pistons at 9 o'clock, and the Trailblazers will host the Spurs at 10 o'clock. In college football, Nebraska quarterback Adrian Martinez has entered the transfer portal. Nader Design and Hardscapes, Knoxville's premier landscaping and hardscape designer. They're ready to turn your home or outdoor business space into a reality. Your new outdoor space awaits. Nader Design and Hardscapes, making backyard dreams come true. Schedule a consultation today at nativetn.com. Have a good afternoon. I'm Logan Ward.
Welcome back to Sports 180 on The Sports Animal. Heather Harrington along with Joel Silverberg. getting ready to talk to John Wilkerson coming up here in just a few minutes. But I wonder, whenever the game rolls around on Saturday, talking still college basketball with Tennessee and Colorado, just what kind of challenge Colorado will present for Tennessee and what the lineup. So that's been one of the more interesting things, is just learning, getting to know this team and what each piece brings to the table.
Ron Slay talked about this on Tuesday, about how the lineup is eventually going to have to be condensed. And Tennessee's still in that portion of the season where they've played a couple of cupcakes, so that hasn't really happened yet. You've seen North Carolina and Villanova. Tennessee's faced really good teams already this season. But you don't know what that's going to look like against a Colorado team that's still struggling a little bit defensively. They're a slower tempo team that Tennessee was used to seeing last year, but now Tennessee is willing to speed things up a little bit more, liking to shoot from outside more. If Colorado's not consistent on offense, it could be a long day for the Buffs. So I'm curious about, if Tennessee's able to control the game, do we maybe not get a clearer picture of what the lineup could look like because Tennessee's in another situation where it's handling its business in the second half?
Yeah, I do wonder about that. I just think it's going to be a hard place to go and win. I think this is a solid team that Colorado has. But you're right. If Tennessee can take their hot shooting, which, man, in some of the games, they have just shot the lights out from three. You know, if Justin Powell is hitting, and some of the different players, Olivier Comois, who has just been hitting at an incredible clip from three. If that goes on the road and that travels well, then yeah, it could definitely be an early game for Tennessee.
The biggest difference to me is the tempo. This is the fastest tempo team that Rick Barnes has had, including the team that went to the Sweet 16 a few years ago, much faster than last year's team as well, significantly faster than the team we saw two seasons ago. And so I wonder, Tennessee now being a faster team, it's a different look for a lot of opponents. So even though Colorado saw this team last year, does that throw a wrench in how Colorado plays defense? Because now you have a team in Colorado that's taken a step backwards on the defensive side of the floor against a Tennessee team that is more comfortable playing at a faster tempo and shooting more from outside. There are just some factors going to that where I think the matchup could favor Tennessee as a result of those things.
We'll head to the Stanley Fenton Gates hotline, where John Wilkerson, co-host of Sports Talk, coming up at 3 o'clock. He joins us for a little extra time on Thursdays. John, talking some Tennessee basketball. We were discussing, you know, the advantages that Tennessee has had early on with their good shooting, but also the disadvantage of not having Josiah Jordan James in the lineup. And Rick Barnes has him listed sort of as day to day. What do you think about Tennessee maybe slow playing Josiah back onto the floor, and if we'll see him at all either versus Colorado on Saturday or versus Tennessee Tech on Tuesday? Or Texas Tech, yeah, excuse me.
Yeah, I don't see a need to rush him back because right now I think Tennessee's got all of its bases covered. You've got more options in the backcourt as well as on the wing. That's not to underscore the value that Josiah Jordan James brings to the team, but I just don't think Tennessee's in a position where they have to rush him back. I mean, it was kind of a double-headed monster that he faced there with the ligament and injury to his hand, as well as the illness that he had when they were up in Connecticut. So I just think, make sure that that he feels good, make sure that everything checks out, and then you get him back out there. It wouldn't surprise me if we saw him against Colorado. It wouldn't surprise me if it wasn't the first appearance back, maybe Texas Tech. And then it also wouldn't surprise me if they just keep him on the shelf until everybody feels ready to sign off on him returning to the floor.
John, don't you just love how we ranked the SEC basketball teams yesterday and then Florida goes and loses?
It always works that way. Always.
Well, and Georgia wasn't on anybody's radar. And then, bam, beating the Memphis Tigers last night.
Yeah, 2-5.
Yeah.
2-5 going into the ball game and picked last in the Southeastern Conference. So, but well done, Bulldogs. Tip of the cap.
On a more serious note, what do you think has stood out to you that's a little bit different from the last couple of seasons? Obviously, the tempo and the three-point shooting, but what's been the thing that has stood out to you about this Tennessee basketball team that just gives it a different feel than some of the teams we've seen over the last several seasons?
Point guard play, I think, front and center. You really hadn't had something like this since Jordan Bone. And so while they did have guys that they thought would be able to kind of rotate and so many different guys that at some point or another could run the point. It just didn't work out. But, I mean, you have true points, whether it be Kennedy Chandler or Zakai Ziegler. You just have guys that you know that are going to be able to take care of the basketball, run the offense. And, I mean, just to watch Kennedy Chandler operate, it really shows you what Tennessee's been missing. Now, granted, not everybody's going to be as good as Kennedy Chandler because he is an outstanding talent. But just to watch him operate tells you a lot of what Tennessee has been missing. And then also just the fact that folks have to guard the perimeter. I mean, teams have been getting away with the lack of consistency from Tennessee and deep for the last few years because all they had to do was just pack in the lane and, you know, pack in the paint and everything was kind of taken care of. It's almost like a team that loves to run the football. Sure, if they beat us deep, that's on us. So I just think that perimeter shooting second, but point guard play number one.
I think the perimeter shooting has been, because we talked so much about it leading up to the season, it still is like a fun surprise when you've got guys like Olivier Komwa hitting for a nice percentage from three. Justin Powell, who we heard a lot about, but we hadn't really seen him before. I mean, some of those guys have just really been impressive with their long range game.
Yeah, and add Chandler to the mix. That wasn't really thought to be a big part of his repertoire when he was signed by Tennessee, but you can see the hard work that he's put in to make himself more dangerous from outside. And, I mean, again, it's not just one guy that you have to worry about, and I think that's what's going to make Tennessee a tough cover, is that you do have to account for a number of individuals that have three. And Victor Bailey Jr., I would love to see him in his final go-around find a little more consistency from deep, because we saw the other night, one, how much — it's never been a question how much he loves the game, but since there have been peaks and valleys, would love to see him find just a rhythm and consistency to his input and contribution, because I just really like him as a ball player.
Yeah, he has definitely been fun to watch, and he's been that kind of sparky guy where whenever he comes in, if he's coming off the bench, he just brings this level of excitement and you don't quite know what he's going to do. And I think that throws other teams' defenses off, and I think it gives the team a spark.
Absolutely. And you look at those guys that at this point, now with James being out of the lineup, you know, Powell made his way into the starting lineup, and they've had some other guys get that opportunity. But you look at guys that can just bring punch right off the bench, and Bailey would be one of those guys when Tennessee gets back to 100%. And Powell, of course, hitting all five of his trays the other night. I mean, these are all such huge things for Tennessee that, if again, it can be a consistent contribution, watch out.
Tennessee basketball isn't the only event happening this Saturday. We'll talk to John Wilkerson for one more segment, get his thoughts on the SEC championship game. And also, John, you're going to have to catch us up to speed on everything we need to know for the Major League Baseball lockout. One more segment with John Wilkerson, co-host of Sports Talk to Go. You're listening to Sports 180 on the Sports Animal. Welcome back to Sports 180. I don't know if you guys have seen on Twitter yet, somebody put out a picture. The renovations are underway right now in Neyland Stadium, and there's just two excavators that have like dug into the bleachers from field level, like right there. And it's pretty jarring to see. You're like, oh my gosh, what are you guys doing? But yeah, renovations underway at Neyland Stadium.
Yeah, Danny White joined us this week on Sports Talk and talked about that would be immediately going into, you know, operation. And those stands that are being taken out are some of the oldest parts of the existing facility. I mean, that's all the way back to the 1920s when those were constructed. So it is tough to see them go, but know that it is in the name of progress. But boy, it didn't take long for them to get going. And I know that they want to do a lot before Tennessee's back on the field again at home.
Yeah, we got to sit in one of the sections. We were in S this past week for the Vanderbilt game. We were lucky enough to get some nice tickets, so we appreciated those very much. But we were sitting next to somebody that has had those season tickets for like 30 years, and he was telling me everything that they have planned for, like under the concourse, places to get refreshments and extra beer lines and things like that. I mean, it's going to be incredible when it's all said and done what happens in Neyland Stadium, I think.
I can't wait to see it, simply for the fact that it's long overdue, but also for the fact that it's such a historic venue when you consider how it was built in stages and expanded different times along the way. And just personally, I can't wait to get a look at it simply for the fact that back in the 80s, I was on the paint crew at Neyland Stadium. And so I got to know some parts of that wonderful stadium for quite a while during those summer months. And I just can't wait to see what it looks like when it is changed.
When I was there, and I don't know what the case is now, but I had an anthropology professor that still had an office in Stadium Hall. So, and it was, you know, right there on the west, underneath the west club level. It's just unreal. So, yeah, it's gonna be neat. That's for sure. John, as the week has gone on, I don't know why, but I have felt this Alabama, their ability building in my mind, taking on Georgia, being an underdog, and just how Nick Saban is going to drum that up. What are your thoughts going into SEC Championship weekend? And have you changed your mind at all or gone any different directions as the week has gone on with who you think is going to win?
Well, I do think certainly Alabama has a chance. I mean, this is not anything new for them, and it is something new for Georgia in the sense that trying to get the job, the task at hand done. They have won the SEC championship, but they haven't beaten Alabama. So I just think that this is going to be something to watch. I do think for the Crimson Tide to win, they're going to have to score with a unit that is not offense. I think they're either going to need a defensive or a special team score, because I just don't know that they'll be able to get that much going against that incredible Georgia defense. But I do think that it is going to be a fun game to watch. I think it's going to be really competitive. And of course, I'm sure if Josh were on hand as part of today's show, he would say that your feeling about the Tide would be your fandom bubbling to the surface.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He likes to say, Roll Tide Heather. Yeah, I know. Joel, thank God Joel's not in the control room right now, because he does have that clip. Stop.
Who do you think trained Logan?
Oh, sometimes I forget these things. All right. I feel like the kinks have been worked out of my back after getting run over by the bus a couple of times this segment. Yeah.
Oh, well, it's all fun.
It's all fun until you get called to the boss's office. What is this about you being an Alabama fan? I'm like, no.
Oh, if Logan's not called to the office for being a Florida fan, I think you're fine.
And that would be like three or four on the list of things I would call him to the office for. So.
There you go. John, it's widely held in the opinion of a lot of people that Georgia is in to the college football playoff, regardless of what happens this weekend. Something that Heather and I were talking about before the show, though, if Alabama does pull off the win, how do you structure the seeding? Because you don't want to drop Georgia to 2 and put Alabama at 3 for another rematch. You don't feel like you can necessarily justify keeping Alabama at 4. How does the seeding look if we get chalk everywhere else, but Alabama beats Georgia this weekend?
Boy, that is a great question, because you could very easily have that. And I don't think that with Alabama as in that scenario, the SEC champion, that they would be 4th. And I guess I guess the greater likelihood would be maybe an unbeaten Cincinnati moving up to number 3 or a 1-loss Oklahoma State. But yeah, you could very easily, just based on the seeding, have a direct turnaround and a rematch. I'd be surprised if the selection committee went that direction, but I also don't know if there's a way that, being intellectually honest, that you could seed it any other way. Because maybe perhaps Alabama jumps to 1 because they would be the SEC champion over what we would view to be an undefeated and, excuse me, a one-loss Michigan team. Yeah, my guess is Alabama goes to 1, Georgia 2, Michigan 3, and Cincinnati or whoever 4.
Okay. I think that makes sense, even though, I mean, we would be within 7 days, and I know weird things have happened, like teams have gotten beat and then like ended up in the playoff a week later. But knowing in my heart that Alabama just struggled to beat a 500 Auburn team, and then 7 days later they beat the number one team in the nation to become the number one team in the playoff, that's hard to process.
My guess is they would compartmentalize the Auburn struggle and just focus on the fact that Alabama beat unbeaten Georgia, the number one team, for the better part of the season. So I think they would get a huge – I think their benefit for beating Georgia would override any struggles they have had against either Auburn or Arkansas or any other games where they just didn't look themselves.
Losses only matter if it's Cincinnati, right?
That's right.
Yeah, that's the only team that can be penalized at this point in time for a loss.
Well, and I mean, it depends. I think Oklahoma State, if it were to waylay Baylor, I think it might be able to perhaps leapfrog an undefeated. I think Cincinnati could beat Houston and still miss, because I just think their strength of schedule is so heavily relying on that win over Notre Dame. I just I don't know that in the end they'll have enough, but something tells me they will have just enough to get in if we don't see anything change other than, I still think they're going to sneak in, but it's still not 100% in my mind.
Hey, John, you're our Mr. Baseball around here. Can you give us the Cliff's Notes version of what is going on with the Major League Baseball lockout? First work stoppage since the 94-95 season. What does this mean? What are both sides looking to do? And where is the concern level at this impacting the season?
Well, it's always possible when you do get into something like this. This is the first time in quite some time that they've let a collective bargaining agreement expire. And so I do think that you just don't want things to get squirrely. What the players' union wants is they want greater protection and reward for the second and third tier players. With the rise of analytics and how much they're valued by front offices, you're not seeing the guys that are a little bit down the chain. You're seeing those wonderfully wealthy contracts, those record-breaking contracts 1 year to the next. Those are still getting signed. It's the guys that are in that next level, or perhaps, quote-unquote, the middle class of the players' union. They're the ones that aren't getting near the deals that they used to. So they think that the heavy reliance on analytics to show exactly how they view a player, that some value has been taken from that next couple of tiers. And so I think that's what the players union is looking for. The owners are looking for, and I can't believe this, they're looking for 14 teams in the postseason, 7 in each league, where you would have the 3 division winners and 4, count them, 4, not 1, not 2, 4 wild card teams, which to me is just mind numbing. There's absolutely no need for it. You don't need 2 wild cards. So I just think that this could be interesting, but I do think in the end they should find some peaceful, easy feelings to meet in the middle on some issues. I don't think this is going to be the dig your heels in and we're going to hold out until we get a salary cap conversation. But I do think that this could be contested for a little bit.
And what's the back end of that postseason deal? Not only would it be the extra wildcard teams, but the division winners getting to select their opponents from the pool of wildcard teams?
Yeah, they're going full-blown SPHL, right?
Yeah. I do like that. Yeah, pick your poison, guys. Let's do it.
Oh, no, that's just so wrong. It is just so wrong. It's so unnecessary. That's just it. It is totally unnecessary, and we'll see. I don't have faith and confidence in the guys that are running the show in Major League Baseball, so that tells me anything could happen because Rob Manfred's going to Rob Manfred.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up, but also playing devil's advocate. Hey, baseball over the past few years has manufactured extra drama with the wild card, with the sudden death, with all of that. And we've kind of enjoyed it. Just saying, maybe there's a chance, John Wilkerson.
Yeah, but all you're doing is making sure that almost half the league makes the playoffs. That so devalues it. Also, what you have to wonder, how deep in November are you willing to go? I mean, do you not go a 7-game series until the league championship series? I mean, would it be best 2 out of 3, then best 3 out of 5? I mean, you're adding another level, at least, of playoff action that's just going to push games into November and the threat of snow.
Yeah, just think when the actual player awards would be announced. It'd be December 1st, championship weekend. We know who wins the Cy Young. There you go.
Merry Christmas, Bryce Harper. Here's your trophy.
Here's your trophy. I mean, that's nuts. Hey, John, we appreciate the extra time today, and we'll catch back up with you on the Powerball.
All right. Sure do appreciate it. Thank you very much. Talk again soon.
John Wilkerson, co-host of Sports Talk, him and Jimmy Himes coming up today at 3 o'clock. You want to stay tuned for that. You also want to stay tuned. We've got hour number 3 right on the horizon. We've got an awesome pop-up fact. I'm telling you, the tide might be turning on my thoughts on who's going to win this Saturday. We'll give you the details there. Alan Bell from Sportsline is going to join us coming up at 2:30. And then we'll close out the show with the Power Poll presented by 865 Axe, where Knoxville goes to throw. That's all coming up. Hour number 3 of Sports 180.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit. And you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.